Hello, my name is Yuri. It is my honor to introduce Board Game Point of View podcast on Dice Tower Network. Comrade Vessel, Tsar of Manchild Frivolity and Great Ruler of Cardboard Empire, has sanctioned this episode fit to listen. So pay attention. There may be tests afterward.
Welcome to the Board Game Point of View. We are a group dedicated to the betterment of all people under the banner of tabletop gaming and also a very proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Tonight I'm joined by Steven.
What up, y'all?
And Seth. Who happens to be sitting right next to me.
Whoa, am I?
In the Board Game Point of View studio.
That's right. New headquarters. Right? Which were the old headquarters.
Exactly.
Then we had the temporary headquarters, and then we went through that one alleyway, and then now
we had a secret headquarters.
Home. We did have one.
Yeah.
But the headquarters have been upgraded, so.
Yeah. I added curtains to the headquarters, is what happened. They're nice.
They are nice.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, this is episode number 40. That's quite an achievement,
I guess.
That's like half of Seth's age.
Well, aren't you guys the same age?
Nope.
No.
He's a heck of a lot older than he was. See, he actually is Benjamin Buttoning. So
okay.
Yes,
okay.
We have both been alive for 20 years, but he's 80 mm-hmm. and I'm 20.
Okay.
It's like dog years.
Well, I think for our special 40th episode, we're going to do something that we like to do about once a year and talk about some of our favorite stuff.
Just in general.
And things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, clearly it revolves around board games, but it's some of our favorite stuff.
Yeah.
You say it clearly revolves around that, but dude, we're so unpredictable. Favorite waffle shop.
Well, I mean, I sent you guys the Google Doc like 2 weeks ago, and I know you guys have been preparing feverishly for 2 weeks now, so I am anxious to hear your answers.
Been preparing up until about 5 minutes ago, and that's a true statement.
We're just the consummate professionals here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course.
So I prepared a list of questions for us to answer, and I think we're just going to jump right into it because it is quite a list, and I want to make sure we have enough time to get through all of these. We are going to be looking at strictly the games we played in 2016 to answer these questions, not necessarily games made in 2016, but ones just that we got the opportunity to play. There are so many games being released every year. We just cannot get to all of them in a given year. So there are some on here that are classics. There are some just from a year ago or two. There's, I think, a healthy mix. But those are the ones we're going to be looking at, the ones that we talked about on the podcast this year.
Yeah, I won't lie. On my favorites list right now, most of the categories have two options, so I'll probably just decide in the heat of the moment. But
well, I mean, we can mention them both, but I am going to make you guys choose a definitive answer for each of these questions. Obviously, we need to talk about our favorite artwork in a game we played in 2016. This is something we talk about a lot.
I hate talking about artwork.
Me too.
It's my least favorite part of a game. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that.
I completely agree.
No sarcasm at all there.
No, there was some really good artwork in games this year and in the past couple of years. So I think let's start with Steven on this one.
So I don't think this one's going to really come as a surprise to anyone. There are tons of honorable mentions this year that I won't get into, but I would have to say that my favorite artwork is, of course, Scythe.
I can't say I am surprised, like you said, but that's just because it's so darn good.
It is good.
Yep. I mean, there are definitely a bunch of awesome alternatives out there. You know, I thought of even Apotheca, Seafall, of course. There's a lot of games that I was very just thoroughly impressed with, but I think Scythe just has to take the cake. And that art book it came with certainly helped. But
right. You know. Well, yeah, I'm going to agree with you on this. You know, obviously, Mr. Rozalski, the artist, had quite the body of work prior to Scythe even being kind of a thing. So it's kind of a cheat, in my opinion, because it's pre-existing artwork that's been utilized for a board game. But I think it still counts. It is probably the most beautiful artwork I've seen implemented in a board game thus far. I did get the art book for this. I do have the art book for Abyss. And you compare and contrast the two, and I think Scythe edges it out. But again, that's because it was artwork not necessarily created for a board game, so there wasn't even necessarily a timeline to get this stuff done. But
that is true. Also, I mean, Abyss is just known for having fantastic artwork, and that remains to be, you know, true.
Right.
But I would tend to agree with you, although they are vastly different.
They are.
Theme and just overall appearance, but I do think Scythe is just slightly more appealing to the old eyeballs.
I probably actually disagree. I think I like Abyss more. Not that it's necessarily better. Mm-hmm. I just think I like the direction that it took.
Right.
But that being said, both are still great. But neither of them are my favorite artwork from the games I've played in 2016.
Heyo, here comes drum roll.
Yes, actually, my favorite was Codenames Pictures.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah,
right. That's interesting.
It is interesting. Now,
it's a game literally called Pictures.
It is.
Right.
And the reason I chose this, not because maybe it was the most striking or technically advanced artwork, but the pictures that you are using to create the board like you do in Codenames, the way that they were constructed and crafted was just so perfect, in my opinion, that because each picture just has like seven different things going on.
Right.
And so if you're wondering how a picture is going to match the diversity of like what a word can bring to your mind, I think it did a really good job. And I just love Codenames, so Codenames Pictures, that artwork. I would love to get like posters of each individual piece and put them on my wall. I would actually do that.
Really?
I'm thinking about it.
Wow.
Because they're just so intriguing and yet so simple, and they're very nice. So, Codenames Pictures.
Wow. Yeah.
There you have it.
I like your answer.
Well, I do this all for you, Adam.
I did
thought for days. What would Adam think of my answer? And that's
yep.
No, I think it's an answer fitting of Seth. It's a well thought out answer in that the artwork is the game.
It is.
So I think that's a great answer. Maybe not the most compelling artwork or the most emotionally...
I disagree.
Oh, okay, well, I'm going to disagree with your disagreement.
Dude,
but...
it really speaks
to... disagreement. Oh. You can agree with my disagreement.
No, I disagree with your disagreeing with me.
Okay.
So, again, maybe not the most emotionally... compelling artwork.
In your opinion.
In my opinion, but...
Dude, I think it really speaks to Seth because it is seemingly simple yet remarkably complex.
Wow, well said, Steve. That was beautiful, actually. I'm going to use that.
No problem, man.
On Tinder. That's going to be in my description.
What?
I mean, no, but yeah, like you said, without the artwork of Codenames Pictures, the game just wouldn't function. Mm-hmm. And I think it functions as well, if not better, than the original Codenames. And so you can look at Scythe and say, I would still play this even if it had a different art style, or even if it was just not as good as it is. But with Codenames Pictures, it really makes the game for me. And so that's why I think it's the best.
Well, I mean, it's true. The entire game is orchestrated around the fact that there are these pictures in front of you, and the game's progression and everything else revolves around you being able to decipher these pictures in a way that makes sense, and it also has to be accessible to a wide variety of audiences and ages. And so an artwork like that that achieves all of it while still being very grounded is pretty significant.
Yeah, and the fact that you want to take these images and put them on your wall, that legitimizes your answer to me. Because artwork, I think, in a game is something that if you were to put it on your wall, you'd be proud to have it up there, you know, displayed. And it sounds like that is precisely what you want to do with this stuff. So,
to be fair, one of Seth's other posters is a blueprint of a donut. So, anyway, moving on.
Question number two. Our favorite components in a game we played this year.
So last year, the question was favorite single component.
Yeah.
But this year, it's overall just components of a game.
You know, single component, multiple. I'm going to let you decide. And I think I'll kick this one off.
Kick it off, man. Kick it right out of the park.
I had the opportunity to play the first expansion for Colt Express, which includes both a stagecoach and a handful of little wooden horses that your meeples can ride in. And the stagecoach itself, just as awesome as any of the cars or engine included in the base game. And the little meeples look adorable riding those little wooden horses.
Oh, man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and this adds a third dimension to where you can actually leave the train, hop onto the stagecoach, hop onto the horses, and I think it took a game that we already enjoy so much and made it even better. So I'm going to say the stagecoach and horses from Colt Express.
Wow.
The first expansion, yeah.
That's solid.
Dude, who's up next, man?
Obviously, you're up next. We're going counterclockwise.
I'm not even in the same city as you. there are two games here. Well, there's three, technically, that I'm thinking of.
All right.
And I thought for sure I was settled on one.
Okay.
But I just can't quite bring myself to say it, man.
All right. Well,
I don't know why.
Hit us with the runners-up and then drop the number one on us at the end.
Okay, so we got Seafall.
Nice.
As a runner-up. Mm-hmm. As a runner-up. Then, and this is really probably going to surprise Adam considering our experience with this game, but the number two slot for me would actually be Cry Havoc.
Ah.
Yes, yeah.
Cry Havoc was solid when it came to components,
mm-hmm.
but I still think my number one, now don't worry before anyone panics here, that this is going to be a trend. I promise it won't be.
Okay.
I think my favorite components would also go to Scythe, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, pretty solid.
I mean, between the miniatures and the mechs and then those just super awesome player mats that you just manage your civilization with.
Right.
And all of the random tokens and everything else. I really enjoy the components and just overall build to that game. Nothing necessarily just like off the hook, groundbreaking necessarily, but all of those components just work together really, really well.
Right. And I know you've mentioned this before, and if you go back to, I believe it's episode 31, where we do a full rundown of Scythe. We do break down the components in that episode, and you made mention of the fact that the components that involve kind of combat are this nice plastic that's nicely detailed. You've got your mechs and your main characters, and then the components that are then used for more commerce purposes are then wooden. Just really nice subtlety, and those player boards are fantastic.
Those are the best.
Indeed. Plus, even as like a more subtle detail, I enjoy how all of the different factions' meeples each have their own look as well.
Right.
Because they all have a different hat, you know, like a different head molding that makes them all more distinguished, you know, and just all the way around, it's very well thought out. So yeah, I that was a tough one for me, but I think I'm going to still stick with Scythe.
I think that's a good answer.
It is, yeah.
And just further testament to how tough that choice was, my favorite components were from Seafall as well. Like, since you had yours as the runner-up, I think it's top for me. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about those metal coins, but when you have those coins and you can put those like in your treasure chest and shake it,
right?
That is just amazing. Mm-hmm. Those coins were great. Mm-hmm. Plus, then of course, the rest of the components, from the artwork to the board, from the ships you sail around, your own little player mats with your ship details.
Right.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, the ships and the metal coins and stuff were pretty remarkable in their own right. But
right.
So again, yeah, those runner-ups for me are very, very close. Mm-hmm. It's a tight race, but
yeah, we played some really pretty looking games this year.
We did.
And now a departure from the aesthetic of a game. We're going to talk about our favorite mechanic, and I think we'll start with Seth.
The game I chose for favorite mechanic is maybe slightly interesting, but I want to go with it anyways. And that is Secret Hitler. And the mechanic that I thought was the best was the instant win from electing Hitler Chancellor. The mechanic of having that one, like, ultra hidden role that is the landmine that you can't step on, which encourages you to play a whole different way and then can just end a game instantly. I think that was one of my favorite things to discover. Out of all the social deduction games we play, that's what makes that one stick out time and time again, is that you have this like secondary kind of objective going on where it's, sure, you can win the game almost the default normal way, but then there's that secret failsafe that you can pursue otherwise, and I just really, really like that mechanic.
Well, that's the mechanic, like you said, that keeps you coming back to this one, as opposed to moving on to other social deduction games.
Mm-hmm. There's always that looming threat of Hitler getting elected and just turning the world into a war.
Right? That is kind of an end game, isn't it?
It is.
You're just done.
You know what that mechanic almost reminds me of? That just sudden victory, the sudden end game. I just picture Minesweeper. And then you foolishly click right on that bomb,
right?
And then it's just game over, man.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's Minesweeper where that last move is, it's in the corner, but you don't know, there's no way to tell which one it is.
Yep.
Is it my turn to go second?
It is.
Okay. Because no, we're going in clockwise order, right?
Counterclockwise.
Okay. Here we go. So, yeah, now I'm going last.
Okay.
Here's how it works.
Okay.
We rotate who goes first. Counterclockwise.
Okay.
Yet we still resolve in clockwise order.
Okay. My favorite mechanic actually comes from a kids game this year. And this,
I think I know what you might say.
Me too. Mermaid Island.
No. Though that was solid. No, no. I'm talking about the Magic Labyrinth.
Ah, yes.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
And though this game was released in 2009 in Europe, it has recently landed here in the U.S. And again, if you want to listen to a full review of that, run back to episode 35, where we do a little bit more in-depth coverage. But this is basically, you are playing one of four different children kind of wandering through a magic labyrinth that at first glance appears to be just an empty field of stone, but you soon discover there are invisible walls. And what's actually happening is you've got your player piece, and below the board is a ball bearing that is magnetized to your player piece. And underneath this field of stone are walls that your ball bearing will run into on occasion and drop and into kind of a chute. And you have to go back to the beginning of the maze. And I think that is just such a clever mechanic, and just wrapping it so tightly with the theme. I can't get over this game, how clever this is. That's my favorite mechanic this year.
That is a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
That is easily in my top three.
Right.
Out of the games we've played this year, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mine is probably going to surprise you both. And my favorite mechanic is actually the Meeple Generations from nice. Village.
Yes.
What?
You know, this is also a much older game.
Right.
But we finally got to play it this year, and our review of Village was not exactly remarkably positive, mm-hmm. you know. But we commented on the fact that we really enjoy this idea of your meeples actually get old mm-hmm. and die, and then those kids like take over the jobs and do whatever, and there's like four generations of meeples, and you actually even have a graveyard to put the meeples in and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you would almost expect more games to implement such a seemingly simple concept.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a lot of even certain like computer games and things like that that I've played, where you have, you know, like the Total War games. You have these generals and these characters, and you're playing along, conquering the entire world or doing whatever. But they're aging, and eventually, you know, they have kids, but then they get old and they will, you know, die of old age. Mm-hmm. And then it really sucks because you're like, wow, that was a key character. But it, I mean, people, that just kind of happens.
Right.
And so I thought it was interesting that this game actually incorporated that in a very simple, reasonably lighthearted kind of a way, rocking the old meeples.
Yeah, and this game still has legs today. I know Stronghold is now publishing it, and I believe it got its third expansion this year with a port where you now can have kind of seafaring commerce and what have you, and then also My Village, which mm-hmm. Seth got to play.
Although I will say one more honorable mention before we move on from this category.
Mm-hmm.
Ye Old Captain's Book from Seafall
mm-hmm.
is quite entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of debate about it. I guess it just seemed a little bit repetitive when it came to the actual entries that you find in it mm-hmm. at times. But the idea of a captain's log that you get to read in and then go to the map even and like choose which destination you go to, it really helps kind of immerse you into the more role-playing side of that game.
Right.
And so I definitely enjoy that as well.
And yeah, like you mentioned that Minesweeper may be similar to the mechanic in Secret Hitler, I think the old Captain's Log reminds me of the old Choose Your Own Adventure books
mm-hmm.
that where you're turning to one page and then based on what decision you make, you go to another page. Mm-hmm. And it's just a book full of all these opportunities, mm-hmm. which is a really cool idea that's not really linked to board gaming, but now it can be.
Right. I know since Dead of Winter came out and they implemented the Crossroads system, which is something very similar. I know Above and Below has implemented kind of the go to the book, have an encounter, choose your path. We've got Seafall doing this now. So I'm glad to see that it is making its way into board games and something I might want to see a little bit more of next year. The next question, our favorite card game. This is basically any game where the cards are the main component. I didn't want to get too specific. So I'm going to start this one off, I think. Is it my turn in the rotation?
No, it's not.
Whose turn is it?
It's Steven.
It's Steven's turn? Okay. Steven,
I almost skipped Steven? You.
What was your favorite card game of 2016?
The Oregon Trail.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Not actually. I'm kidding.
Nope, we're going to cut out. If you say anything else, we're cutting it. Unless it's about the Oregon Trail.
Actually, you know, sure, I'll roll with it.
Oh, no.
Yes.
You're going to have to defend your answer now.
Credibility ruined. In reality, though, while I have much love for the Oregon Trail, I would have to say that my favorite card game of the year is probably the Game of Thrones card game, second edition, to be specific. Seth and I had a lot of fun playing that game earlier in the year. It's tapered off since then, of course, but I still think highly of that game. I'm not usually like a crazy big fan of those just kind of deck building 1v1 card games, but this one just had a strong enough theme and art style and a couple of unique mechanics and everything where it was very enjoyable.
Another Fantasy Flight card game.
Fantasy Flight is just on point with these.
Because you guys played another card game this year, also by Fantasy Flight.
Yeah, what was that?
Revolving around another impressive IP.
Star Wars the card game was also very impressive, but I have even
most impressive?
More li- what?
What?
No. I said... Oh.
Come on.
I get it.
Thank you. Move on.
I get it. Star Wars the card game was also very impressive. However, I have such limited experience with it that I cannot solidly say that it was my favorite card game of the year. I would have to play it a few more times.
Right.
This was really difficult for me, actually. Huh? I played a lot of card-based games. Like you said, Star Wars the card game and Game of Thrones the card game. Very, very close to the top. It's just so difficult. But what I'm going to say is I'm going to say Arctic Scavengers.
Nice.
Nice.
Because, again, so many card games. Like, the Bloodborne game is primarily card-based. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that one. Spyfall is another one. Pure cards. But Arctic Scavengers was a deck-building game. Kind of a successor to a game like Dominion, but I think it improved on it, and the mechanics of it, even with like the committing people to the kind of fight for resources, reminded me of the secret committing things to the Force in the Star Wars card game, and I had a blast playing it, and I would still like to play it more. I don't know if we got to even use all of the expansion components, so
I don't think we've played with all the cards in that box yet, because we got the big box with both expansions. And yeah, this is a hidden gem, one that was not widely publicized when it came out, but really nice marriage of theme with mechanic, and there's a lot of replay ability there being a deck builder.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is actually one of those games that while we haven't played it a whole lot since our initial review, it randomly pops into my head. It left its own little imprint on my mind for sure. Every time we would sit down at your table, Adam, and be like, hey, what do we want to play for a game? Arctic Scavengers would just kind of like linger there.
Right.
Like, hey, I wonder if we should play that again. You know,
right.
It's just, just solid.
Lingering like the crunchy footprints in a snow covered field.
Or like frostbite.
Or chicken pox.
Or hepatitis B.
Well, my favorite card game is going to be a little bit of departure from the heavy theme found in both of yours. And I think you guys might know what I'm going to say here. But
Arboretum?
I'm going to say Arboretum.
Yes. Hey-o!
Yep. Wow. Yeah. A game like this has not burned my brain.
I can just hear Seth wanting to freak out right now.
He doesn't look pleased, I'll say that. But a card game like this has not burned my brain so thoroughly like anything I've played in a while. There is a lot of depth there to be explored and a lot of strategy. It's a very simple premise. The rules are very straightforward, and there are a few of them. But the path to victory is a tough one. And this is just about arranging trees in an arboretum. And it's a beautiful game on top of that.
Dude, I will say that the strategy to Arboretum is truly puzzling.
Yes.
And I respect it for that. I actually do. And I respect you, Adam, for going against the tide and choosing that.
Right.
You know what else is truly puzzling? The appeal of the game.
Seth, I think you just need to give it one more chance, maybe two, and I think it will captivate your brain. Because you'll want to play it differently the next time, and then you'll want to play it differently the next time. And
oh, I already want to play it differently. Well, completely differently.
The funny thing about this game for me was that there are so many strange levels of almost intrigue behind how you would actually win this game.
Yeah.
That it partially frightened me, and I didn't even want to go that deep into it because I was like, I don't think I can handle mm-hmm. it. So I just made pretty pictures with the trees.
Well, you can do that too, and you can end up with a nice looking arboretum at the end of the game. But I've played this quite a bit with different numbers of people, different types of people, and it's just a very clever and thoughtful game. Currently, I let Mr. Gregory and his new wife borrow the game, and reports via the text message indicate that it is going over very well with really? Those two, because they are both very strategy-oriented and heavy Euro gamers, so I'm...
Ah, well, that explains it.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I may talk a lot of smack about it, but I can see where the appeal comes from. I can see how you would enjoy it, and I do think I need to play it more to really understand that. But to me, and this is what I say about Euro games too, if you've got to play it like three times before you really like enjoy it, what's the point?
Yeah, but Arboretum is fast.
Nope.
Whereas
the point still stands.
Okay.
Dude, no matter how decrepit and crumbling to pieces this pillar is, yeah, that is right. going to be the pillar of his argument.
Exactly.
Okay? So just right. let him have this, and we can just move on.
Right.
No, I could argue this for a long time, but I won't.
Right. Well,
okay, you're going to argue this? Okay.
No, I'm not going to argue this. I'm going to say if you want reviews of the Oregon Trail and Arboretum, you can check those out on episode 37. If you want a review of the Game of Thrones card game, check out episode 27. And you'll have to go all the way back to episode 24 for Arctic Scavengers. But definitely worth a listen if you're interested in any of these themes. This brings us, then, to favorite theme in 2016. And the themes in board games are as varied as the flavors of ice cream. There are just so many. And you know I'm going to use a food analogy because that's what I do.
It's very true.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start us off because it's my turn to go first.
It is.
And I'm gonna say a game that we played, I believe, earlier this month. A game about pig farming.
What?
Happy Pigs. I thought.
I really did not expect that.
Yes. I think this theme is mundane and whimsical and fun, and the way it was implemented with the mechanics was just really nice. But the theme, I love games with animals. in general, and farming animals is something that I can get on board with. And the fact that I got to farm ducks, which is not something you farm anyway, but I just thought that was fun. And I think we discovered there's the penguins that you can
That's right.
you can farm, and maybe not surprising, Agricola was my favorite right. game for many years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, happy True. Pigs.
Also, I totally have a duck farm in my backyard, so...
Okay.
Huh. In fact, I'm kind of offended that you say it's not a thing, but I'll get over it. I'll get over it in time.
That's why Steven moved to Wyoming. Yeah.
The climate's just not right up here in Montana for
right.
ducks.
Yeah.
Okay, so my favorite theme is another one where I had several contenders in close competition to one another. But I think the one that's going to take the top slot is none other than Seafall.
Nice.
The whole idea of being a naval captain back in the... What time period would you say this is?
Well, listen to episode 37.
Right.
To find out what year this supposedly takes place.
Right.
But the idea, of course, the theme of being a naval ship captain, and you are sailing through these unknown waters, making landfall on these yet-to-be-discovered islands and meeting the locals and just that whole kind of adventure. It even kind of, this game even sort of reminds me, of course, of movies that I hold near and dear to my heart, like the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, which, of course, inspired our original name for this game pre-release, which was Rob Dobbio's Pirates.
Right.
I still maintain that maybe they should have rocked that title, but
yeah, you know,
I guess you can just keep your sales mediocre, you know.
I'm going to get a magic marker and I'm going to cross it out on the box and we'll write our own title in. It'll be good.
And that's the beauty of legacy games.
That's right.
they encourage that kind of behavior.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I think part of theme, I think artwork plays a part with the theme of a game. And so that, you know, Seafall was a runner up for my favorite artwork. And here in theme, of course, that really helps just kind of further cement my decision, because the art style that really ties in well with the kind of historical content, you know, like the classic almost oil paintings of the captains, the notebook hand-drawn sketches almost of your advisors and just how that all kind of ties together, and then how you can modify your ships to better across these perilous waters, and all of it just really fits together. And as I said before, I really just you start playing this game and it's very immersive, and I think that's, you know, the theme is just plays a large role in whether or not you can connect to a game.
Right. I think that's a really good answer. This game was in development for so long, and I know that Rob was concerned about the theme of this game, and he wanted that to come through, and I think it does very clearly. So, good answer.
Following that up, if I even can, my favorite was another really tough one. I didn't have anything written down. And since I can't say Apotheca, because apparently it's not thematic enough...
We're going to have this conversation again.
Oh, I got to bring this back. So that's number one in my heart, but
right.
The game that I think had the best theme or was the most thematic for me was probably Zombie 15, just because when I played that game with my friends, it just really felt like you're there running from this zombie horde, and as it builds up, the tension builds, and you're just rooting through houses looking for items and fighting off zombies and trying to help each other up. When the horde can even just knock you onto the ground and stuff like that. Hmm. That was a really, really fun game. And the soundtrack and just time management theme of that really drove it home for me.
Right.
And another solid shout out to The Cave. I love that theme. I got trapped in a cave and it was just as terrifying as you think it would be.
Right. That would probably actually be my runner-up. Yeah. As well as The Cave.
Nice. We finally agreed on something.
Yes.
The Cave definitely crossed my mind as well. Although my runner-up, aside from Scythe, of course, but I didn't want to just keep going with Scythe.
Right,
that seemed repetitive.
Right.
One of my runners-up was actually Galaxy Trucker.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not from this year, of course. It's quite a bit older, but we played it for the first time this year. Mm-hmm. And the idea of just being this... Again, it's funny, it's still technically a naval captain. Apparently, I'm just really into that. But just dashing through space while your ship's being just torn to shreds by asteroids and everything else, it was very intense.
Right.
And I thought that was a unique concept. Even just how, like, you assemble your ships just from random, almost spare parts and just the whole thing, I thought it was very... very entertaining.
Yeah, and that game is older, and it's still just as good now as it was when it was first released. So I am looking forward to this game sticking around for a long time in my collection, at a minimum.
You don't want to know what's interesting about that game? the designer of that game, Vlada Schwadl. I think he made my favorite overall game that I've played this year.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you can guess what it is. Uh-huh. It's Codenames.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say enough about this game. It's definitely the game I've played the most.
Mm-hmm.
I've played it with at least like six different groups of people, and half of those being non-gamers. Just took it down to see my family over the holidays. I've just taken it to a group of people that I hardly even know and brought it out, and they immediately wanted to purchase it after that one play. And then, of course, it just comes out all the time at game nights and in my own home. It's just such a solid game and just such a good game to take anywhere, like I said. And it's gotten people into the hobby.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. That is one that I would also say that I've played possibly the most out of my board game collection. And the majority of the people that I have played that with have been non-gamers. And it's just people, you know, who are familiar, of course, with the classics, but they're wanting to play a game, wanting to play a party game, and they suggest, you know, apples to apples or something like that. And those are, of course, they're totally solid, nothing wrong with them. But I've been, you know, suggesting, why don't we play this Codenames game instead? It's probably one you haven't heard of, and yada yada. And yeah, it always goes over so well, and everyone seems to love it, and it really gets them kind of more interested in the newer games, and all around, it's just a really, really good choice. So, nice one, Seth.
You love this game enough that you actually own all three versions, don't you?
I picture Seth opening the sun blind or whatever in his car, and pinned inside of it is one of the cards from Codenames. Because instead of like a picture of his family or something, he just has one of these cards from Codenames pictures. Just everywhere he goes, he has these little cards.
Yeah,
one
exactly.
In the corner of his bathroom mirror.
Open up his wallet, and it's just a fold-out of all the different cards.
Hey, you want
to see, yes.
My pictures collection.
Right. No, this game won Game of the Year last year, and it deserves it. And I'll say this is probably one that I have played probably more than any, like you guys as well this year, just because it is so accessible. And I have been to Barnes & Noble a few times and walked past the games, and I've seen people there, especially around the holidays, looking at the games a little bit puzzled because there are so many choices, and they want to get their family a game, and they just don't know. And I just immediately, you know, would pick up Codenames and say, are you looking for a game? Because this one is fantastic. And I think I should get some commission at Barnes & Noble, actually.
Yeah. I was going to say, are you getting, like, some royalties or anything for that?
I have talked to so many people there and have sold so many games for them, but that's beside the point.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think Seth's choice of Codenames for his favorite overall game played this year is fantastic.
And just one last thing I want to say is that even though it is just like that accessible game that you can play with any group, the fact is I enjoy playing it every single time. It doesn't get stale. Like, I'm excited to bring it out and play with a new group of people every time.
Absolutely. I agree with that. One game that used to be that way, but it's like just starting to get a little bit stale for me, is actually Love Letter, which we talked about a lot last year. And in recent playthroughs of that, it's kind of like just starting to get to that repetitive side of things, you know? But thus far, Codenames, you're totally right, Seth. I mean, it's not like I get it out of the closet because I want to introduce these guys to this game and I'm very, like, disappointed about it. Instead, I'm like, dude, we need to play this game because it's awesome.
Exactly.
So, Adam, you're up,
is
man.
It me?
It's you.
Okay. Well, we played a lot of really good games this year, and this one was close. But I am going to have to say Pandemic Legacy, for me, was the best game I played this year. It climbed to the top of my top 10 within just the first few plays because I had already enjoyed Pandemic so much, but this just further engrosses the theme of the game and makes it a legacy experience that I would encourage anybody to play. This is a theme that anybody can get behind, and it's just an awesome experience. So yeah, Pandemic Legacy for me. favorite overall game this year?
I think that Pandemic Legacy would probably be at the top of my list if I had gotten a chance to play it. From everything I've seen and heard, it looks awesome.
Yeah. I enjoyed it enough thus far that I actually ordered a second copy to keep on hand and play in 10 years again.
The real question is, if you have two copies, did you get both cover variations?
Oh, you know I did.
Red and blue.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. My favorite overall game of the year almost feels like cheating to an extent, because it's kind of just a little bit of a retake on my favorite game of last year. But I'm actually going to have to still stick with Dead of Winter, The Long Night.
Nice.
Still good old Dead of Winter. It's still number one on my favorite games list. But this new version, The Long Night, with these expansions they released, is just so good. And between, I mean, we were playtesters for this, and then a few weeks back, Adam, when the three of us were, we played this like three times or something in one evening.
Right. Because
it's still just that much fun. And I really do think that they took an amazing game and made it even better with these expansions. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, future content they release for it and everything else. But very, very close runner-up, of course, as everyone saw coming, Scythe. Scythe is definitely up there. But I think Dead of Winter still is my favorite.
Yeah, and I think at this point we can all agree that if you guys don't own Dead of Winter yet, you should definitely pick up The Long Night as opposed to picking up kind of the original, because you're going to get everything that's in the original game plus more, outside of just the 30 original characters, which definitely worth it. You can pick up the original game as well. And in 2017, we have the second expansion to the Dead of Winter franchise. I know you enjoy cooperative games, and this is taking a cooperative game and making it combative. So we'll see if Dead of Winter can go 3-for-3 with you next year.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know very, very little about it, and so I am still totally optimistic and willing to be pleasantly surprised, and I'm sure it'll be great regardless. But it's one of those things where if Dead of Winter, The Long Night had been more focused on player versus player, then even this year, I think Scythe probably would have eked out the number one slot. But there's something about the teamwork cooperative element that I just really, really love in this game. And then that slight, you know, there's still like the tense PvP element of the traitor mechanic, of course. And for me, that's kind of like all you really need, especially when you can become the bandit king.
Right.
And you have your own army of bandits and all that. Like that was cool. But going full out, again, I mean, we don't know any details, but if they go the route of full just nonstop fighting other players, I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun. But I'm not sure if it'll hang up there with the top of my games anymore. But who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. So I think that kind of ties into our final question of the night, and that is, what was our favorite gaming experience of 2016? This could be an event or just an hour played with a group of friends.
And I believe I go first.
Yeah, I think we're starting with Steven on this one.
I think so too.
Yeah.
My favorite gaming experience. There are several that definitely come to mind, including, you know, various playthroughs of Code Names with different groups of people and all sorts of nonsensical theatrics that went down with that. But I think my favorite experience was actually playing, you mentioned it earlier, Seth, playing Zombie 15 with Adam and Tara. That game is, you know, probably not even in my top 10 favorite games,
right,
but it's one of those that's just, it's very entertaining. And some of the craziness that happened with the three of us was very memorable. It was almost, you know, like our playthrough of the cave,
right,
was definitely hilarious and very memorable as well. but the Zombie 15, something about how, you know, Tara at one point was playing as like the smallest of the children, you know, because they're playing as teenagers, of course. She was playing as the shortest one and yet had to carry me, and I was like the oldest, biggest one, like on her shoulders or something, and just all kinds of ridiculous things, and it was just a ton of fun.
Right, and the fact that we played, I think, 7 missions in a row on that, I think made it even better, because we just, the excitement over the course of the evening just kept building. And we finally had to call it quits at like midnight,
because we all had many heart attacks, I think.
All right. No, I think.
And then just the strategy of all of us like yelling at each other of like what each one should do, because you're working as a team, of course. And it's like, you know, what do I need to go in that building fast? I'm about to get overwhelmed. Right. And just like all that. It was
No, there were some amazing moments in that game. And I think we do talk about those in episode 25. And Seth has played this as well, and I know he had an equally memorable time with his group. So, yeah, awesome. Awesome gaming experience, for sure.
Great choice. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite experience would have to be the time that we first got together and played Galaxy Trucker. Because that was just... I don't know what kind of mood we were all in, but from the very beginning, we were just making these weird deals and like agreements, the gentleman's bet of not looking at the cards.
Right.
Oh, man. And then just all those moments, just so many that I can remember specifically.
When your ship just lost each side and then right down the middle, just destroying it.
Perfect.
Oh, my gosh.
So perfect. Oh, it was beautiful. And I think that's the hardest I've ever seen Adam laugh, is when my ship just got destroyed. It was like 5 minutes straight. Just could not speak. That was so great. And then Adam's just cruising around, and as Steven, you and I are just getting demolished.
Oh, right? Man. And then that time when I immediately lost my entire crew, but my ship was unscathed. Exactly. So I just had this perfect empty ship floating through space.
Yep. I think that's got to be the top experience. Mm-hmm.
That's a really, really good choice.
There were so many that are close, but that one, I'll never forget that.
Yeah, and again, that's a game that we played all 4 rounds of back
to
back.
Yep.
We did the full campaign. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just got better and better. But yes, the first ship that you built, just perfectly getting like the right side sheared off, exactly. Then the left.
And then right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
I had one gun and one thruster left, so I could make it.
Right. I just love when things go horribly wrong in board games. Same. It's just funny.
And I was randomly obsessed with Captain Harlock, Space Pirate at the time. And so I just named everything after that. Adam's ship was like the Fluffy Bunny or something.
That's how you get through space unscathed.
Yep.
It is funny, you were totally fine Seth and I were gloating about being pirates and we got just wrecked.
Oh yeah, we were pirates.
Just utterly destroyed.
Well, I'm going to mention my runner-up, because Steven mentioned it earlier, and that was the evening we played The Cave. I mean, this is a game about speleologists exploring a cave. It's a resource management game, but you can have such a good time storytelling in this game. I remember, there were so many fun moments. I took a picture in just this deep, dark hole of this cave, and I remember just us weaving the story of, I've taken this photograph, and the flash from the camera illuminates just like a bear.
Directly
right
in front of
me, and I book it out of the cave. And there was another instance where Steven erected his tent in a tight squeeze, so this thing is like just like upside down in the tight squeeze. He's got to figure out how to sleep in the thing for the night.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the ultimate was, and you just can't make this stuff up, was Steven was trying to make a connection down this long corridor, and he came to a point where he could turn back or he could keep going in hopes of finding a connection back to camp. And he
I was almost out of supplies, right. So it was either go back and survive mm-hmm. or hope to just press on
right.
and tie around through the bottom and still survive.
And you went through like a level one tight squeeze into a level two, into a level three.
Into a level three.
Right? And then into a dead end. and
yep, that... the only like dead end tile in like the whole game or whatever, I'm pretty sure. I don't know, but yeah, a dead end after this oh my God, yeah. ridiculously... comically long tight squeeze.
Yep.
And then the whole thing with that game is that after you run out of supplies, you have to crawl because you're just like so weak
right.
and broken down. So then I was going to just have to crawl back through like all of these tight squeezes and stuff. And oh my mm-hmm. gosh.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I enjoy the cave, but the storytelling element that you can infuse into it is just as much fun. So
one thing I think we should point out just real quick, though, is that we are lucky enough to have such a great gaming group mm-hmm. here that almost any game we play, no matter how dull the theme or mechanics or anything mm-hmm. else may seem, we always seem to have fun.
Right.
Like... it's just, again, between the storytelling and the random, needless role play and everything else we seem to do, I mean, just about every time we play a game, it's a very memorable, very fun experience. So, yeah, narrowing these down to just, like, our mm-hmm. favorites is very challenging.
Yeah, because games are just a tool that we use to enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, just a catalyst for social interaction.
Right. Which is...
look at that phrase.
I was thinking yeah. of that for like 3 minutes.
Nice, nice. No, but...
I wondered why you were so quiet.
But it's the perfect tie-in to my favorite gaming experience of the year. And this was an evening. My parents were in town and we were just sitting in the living room, just chatting. And I said, you know, would you guys like to play a game? And my parents aren't big gamers, especially my dad, but I brought one down and set it on the coffee table, and it was Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. This is a game. You open the box, and inside is a newspaper and a map of London, kind of a telephone directory, and... a number of cases that you get to solve along with Sherlock. And it's just sitting around talking through a case. And it was really cool to legitimately prove that there are games for everybody to play, even those that don't really enjoy games. And since then, I have gotten my parents to play a handful of others that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's...
yeah, that's awesome.
That mm-hmm. that was probably my favorite gaming experience.
Although, the only thing I'll say is that I feel like to really properly introduce them to the hobby, you probably should have gone with Lifeboat. But, you know, hindsight's 2020. You did what you could, right? So...
but you know what? That game...
no, no regrets.
That game might actually work in some families.
Oh, I think
yeah,
it would.
Yeah. So, to wrap up the evening, gentlemen, have any of the games we played this year replace some games on your top 5 or 10 list from the previous year? Because I know there are a handful that have been replaced on my list.
Yes, I have my top 10 list written down here, mm-hmm. and... there are some of the classics that remain,
mm-hmm.
but it definitely looks very different from last year.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's good. That's good. Well, I'll tell you guys what has been added to my list, and I think I can remember the ones that that got bumped from the list as well. So, obviously, Pandemic Legacy made it onto the list and is probably going to be on the top of my list for some time to come. It's right up there tied with dead of winter at this point. I think it's going to be hard to replace those two at the top of my list anytime soon. Galaxy Trucker definitely made it, I think, into my top five games. I think it replaced King of Tokyo. Sherlock Holmes made it onto my list and has, I believe it knocked Agricola off of my top 10 list. Yeah. So those are the three that have made it onto my list. Again, Suburbia and X-Wing kind of rounding out my top five.
It's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
My list has definitely changed. Maybe not a ton, but the top five, I think, have shuffled around a lot. Number one, I don't think has moved, as you can guess by what I've been talking about and everything that's been happening. No, X-Wing is still up there. This year it became the most popular miniatures game ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely still first in my heart. Right. And I think it'll continue. I'm excited for what they've got coming up next. Codenames, again, I think that would go all the way up to number two even. Just because, like I said, you can bring it out anywhere and it never gets old for me. Plus, with Codenames Pictures, it adds even more variety that I can use. There are so many games that, I don't know, some of them that were on my list last year, like Love Letter. I think I haven't played it a ton, but I still have used it a lot to play with people who, or either play a quick game before other people show up, or play with people who don't usually game. And so I still think Love Letter is up there. I like it. I like that one a lot. Apotheca is another one that I think, I think I could say it's in my top five.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely in my top 10, but I think it might've beat out something like you mentioned King of Tokyo getting leaked out. I think I had King of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I was going to bring out a quick game for that's easy to play, easy to learn, with still a lot of depth to it, I think Apotheca would be my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a blast playing that one. And then honorable mentions to Secret Hitler, the best social deduction game. You know, I think those are the only... Well, Dimension, maybe.
Dimension.
I really like that game.
For the theme, right?
Hey, what about Happy Pigs, man?
Happy Pigs is good. But Dimension, I want to play that all the time. But it only goes up to four people. Dang it. So that's my top five. There's so many more that I can say for top 10, but
yeah.
I would need a long, long time to process those out.
I actually have a full top 10 or even like top 12 list I have typed out here in front of me, but I might read off the whole thing at the end, but for now I'll stick to the trend we have going. So my top five, when compared to last year, has two key games that are just still firmly in place. Number one would still have to be Dead of Winter, of course. Only variation being The Long Night as opposed to the base game.
Right.
But Dead of Winter is still number one. And my number three game remains to be Star Wars X-Wing, the miniatures game. We love that game a lot. However, the other three slots in my top five are very different. So last year, my number two game was Splendor. This year, that has been replaced by Scythe.
Nice.
My number four game was Lords of Waterdeep. That game has been replaced by Codenames.
Nice.
And my number five game was technically in my journal here. I have Castles of Mad King Ludwig, but then it's crossed out and I put Love Letter. So I guess it could kind of be either one of those, but regardless, my number five game, and this is probably going to be a real shocker, but it is actually Apotheca.
What?
As well.
Wow.
That is a shocker.
Nice.
And then if we continue on down the list, I have, of course, now Splendor. Seafall, I have in number seven right now. I feel like there's actually a lot of potential for it to move up into the top five, but right now I have it just chilling at slot seven. Mm-hmm. Following that, Lords of Waterdeep, of course, then Galaxy Trucker, and rounding the whole thing out, just because I think we've had a lot of great memories with this, especially, of course, last year at Origins and all of that. Number 10, I actually have Colt Express.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm.
Honorable mentions, though, of course, go to Risk Legacy. I love Risk Legacy a lot, mm-hmm. but it is just Risk. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, having it in the top 10 when you have all these new, crazy, awesome games coming out seems a little bit like,
yeah.
Castles of Mad King Ludwig, as before, I still really like that mm-hmm. game. And actually one that I almost put in the top 10 because, again, it may be surprising, but for some reason I really, really enjoy it, is Sheriff of Nottingham.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is one that I definitely think about. Yeah. That's a really fun group game if you have the right people to play it. Mm-hmm. And, some good memories with that one.
Yeah. What I was going to say is I think the best part of this is that even though we're replacing all these games on our list, it's like, these games are still really good games. They're mm-hmm. just even better ones now. So right. That's, yeah. I think, just awesome that we just mm-hmm. have this huge pool now of games that are mm-hmm. in our top or have been our favorites of all time that we can pull from.
Right. Yeah, and I think Colt Express may make its way back onto my top 10 at some point after playing the Stagecoach expansion more, and then the Marshall expansion is due to release this spring as well, and I look forward to playing that. So that may make a reappearance on the top 10 for me. Mm-hmm. So, boys, this has been episode 40.
This has been 2016.
Well, I am looking forward to doing 40 plus more of these episodes, and I'm looking forward to 2017.
Yeah.
And I think in episode 41, we will be talking quite a bit about what we're looking forward to mm-hmm. in 2017.
And who we are and our board game resolutions.
That's right.
Also, we hopefully by then will have designed the Donut Blueprint poster, so that will be available in our store on the website, because that's also going to be a thing in 2017.
You guys,
I'm saying it now.
You guys make so many promises. Posters,
so much merch, anything your heart wants.
The thing is that our promises
desires.
Hinge on our listener interaction, so that's why none of them ever happen.
That is true. That is true. Well, join us again in a few weeks in 2017 for episode 41. Good night, everybody. So yeah, there were a lot of interesting mechanics released,
and some of them were in some pretty cool card games.
That's weak.
All right, drop us a sick beat, Adam. we're gonna have a segue battle.
It was one very well thought out sentence. Right. We need to clean that up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And by clean up, I mean Steven, you say it.
Dude, voice of the podcast. Right. Cards.
Okay, what?